go explain evolution to the monkeys.
God damn you all!
Welcome back, all you space monkeys, to the final Planet of the Apes episode until they finally make another Planet of the Apes movie. But as far as this marathon goes, we are done.
Yeah.
Well, after this episode.
It's been a long, long trip there.
To space and back.
Yeah.
This is Cinema Demore, if you're unsure. I am Justin Morgan. I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And it's just the two of us again. Jacob wish that he could have been on Dawn and this episode, which is War for the Planet of the Apes, which came out in 2017. Another Matt Reeves picture, second director to do two Apes films in a row. He's not going for the record of three. He's currently doing The Batman. And the last that I saw with the Planet of the Apes sequel or reboot, remake, I don't really I'm not really sure where the story is going. That is a new director altogether. Now it's a Disney movie, isn't it?
I mean, technically, since they bought Fox.
It doesn't really take anything away from it.
Yeah, they're not R-rated films or anything like that.
Well, even, like, I saw something where they were talking about Indiana Jones 5, and they said, all I care about is I want to know if they're going to stick with the Paramount, like, label in the beginning, where they always transition into the beginning of the movie into, the shot of a mountain or something.
Probably not. I don't want to say it's impossible, but that'd be like a weird deal that they'd have to make with Paramount. Like, hey, we know you're not getting any profits off this, but can we use your logo?
They would ask for half or something.
Exactly. That's the reason I think they'll never, like, it's not the same as like Spider-Man, where they're very clearly, even if they split any revenues with Sony to use the character, they're making something. But to give Paramount something for which Paramount's not going to do anything on the film, they would probably want like some huge amount of money just to use their logo or something like that. They'd be jerks about it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what, like, because Disney did Dimension films, right? Wasn't that them? Like, anything they got an R rating?
No, I don't think they did Dimension. They had Miramax. They bought Miramax, or I think at one point, but I don't think they did Dimension. They did Buena Vista.
There was something. I thought it was like the Faculty or something. Or was Touchstone. Like Disney.
They've owned a lot of different things that they've technically released under, but I don't think Dimension was one of them. I thought that was, I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking that's like Sony or something like that did Dimension. No, Dimension was Harvey Weinstein, Miramax. It was acquired by the Disney company in 1993, so they did buy it eventually.
That's okay. That makes sense, because I swore like the Faculty and Scream, and I thought that all those movies were owned by Disney in some aspect.
Yeah, they bought it. They bought it from the previous owner that had the films before that, Paramount Pictures. That's who released all the films prior to Disney acquiring them. So Disney apparently just takes everything from Paramount.
It's fine. I mean, you're not going to make your own stuff. Who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only thing that I kind of like is whenever it happens so often anymore, where a studio will just use their old logo from that time if it takes place during that time.
Yeah, like when they use like the old Universal logo or something like that.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we'll just use the old 93 one for this Child's Play movie or something. But we're kind of clear with like the Fox logo left the beginning of all the Star Wars movies, and now it's just that Lucasfilm that I don't even think has any music. It just like shows it for a second. The TV shows have their thing though. I don't know what you want to call it. Their opening logo. You were muted.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's all you said.
Yeah, I just agreed with you.
Well, we finally made it to the end here. I'm happy that we ended up doing all these movies. It definitely is a lot more difficult to mix them than it is to just watch and record. Because that's all I watched in May. All the Apes films and a couple others. And it was nice because you brought it up earlier how when we did Kaiju or similar themes where you can kind of branch off into a bunch of different films, you usually get absorbed in all these films. And when we decided to do the Apes movies, we decided to do all of them. And I mean, you can't really go anywhere else. We did them all. You didn't miss a damn thing. I know. And we spaced didn't it out enough.
Didn't even watch like Congo that. Or anything like that. Didn't get into all those good things.
Dunstan checks in. So yeah. I really wanted to see.
That's our follow-up Apes films. That's when we do lesser Apes movies. Dunstan checks in. I'm sure there's another one where like an ape. Oh yeah, what is it? MVP, like most valuable primate. I remember that one when we were at Hollywood Video. It was like a ripoff of Air Bud, except it was a monkey playing like hockey or something like that.
Honestly, it'd be really funny if we was like, oh, we're not doing themes anymore, but secretly our theme was there had to be a primate in it of some sort. So we just get
the secret.
Like, how long do you? Yeah, how long can we make that last? There's a lot of primates. They're usually in the movies like the remake of Tim Burton's remake, where they had the chimpanzee in space. Like, there's a lot of space movies that just have chimps. Like, they're the ultimate sci-fi animal, I guess. Unfortunately, War for the Planet of the Apes, I've watched the least. Watched it in theaters. I think I saw it on TV, and then I finally watched the copy that I had bought when it came out.
Yeah, I think it's with any franchise, you always, because you rewatch like the first one before the second one comes out, and then you'll rewatch the first one and the second one. Like, it's probably the same thing I could say with something like The Matrix. I've probably seen the first Matrix 10 times more than I've seen Reloaded, and I've probably even seen Reloaded more than I've seen Revolutions. Like, I would say I've probably seen that one the least.
TV shows are the same way. Oh, Game of Thrones is perfect. Like, how many times did I rewatch the first season of Game of Thrones? Several times. But how many times did I watch the last season? Just once. And that sounds like a knock on the season, but that's almost every show. Every single show, you just rewatch before the next season, and then, or if it's too big, you just don't bother. Yeah. I've had that where I'm like, I don't have time to rewatch it. I'll wing it. And we start watching it, and I can't remember who these characters are. Like, were these big characters in the last season? Because I don't recognize any of them. The catch-up, you're, like, really, really hoping that you have a nice previously on, and you don't. It's like a Mad Men previously on, where it's just random shit.
Yeah.
And you're like, that did not help me at all understand what was going on.
Mad Men might have had the greatest, like, previously and next week's episodes ever. It was just... Can't remember what that one episode where it was just Pete in a phone booth, and it just like cuts that shot of him like looking nervous in a phone booth, and it was like, next time on Mad Men, and I'm like, what was that?
And that ended up being one of the greatest scenes where they're like, what are you looking at?
Really good,
I thought you were looking at me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was great. Shut the door. Have a seat. Light up a cigarette. Like, that's the whole ad. Oh, and then Lost got pretty good too, finally, like their last season. Well, maybe their last couple seasons, they never showed anything in the episode that was coming up.
Yeah.
And the finale was just all clips of old episodes. Like, you're going to watch it. Why spoil it? But War was interesting because we knew it was coming for a while. Dawn ended up exceeding our expectations. And maybe this kind of met our expectations. Were our expectations a little high coming off of Dawn?
I don't know. I don't know that I had, like, any specific expectations. I can't say. I mean, when your movie's called War for the Planet of the Apes, you're kind of, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of expecting a war movie, not necessarily anything crazy. But I think this one gets, I don't know, for me, this one may be the most emotional one. It has a lot of big moments, obviously some deaths that happen, but I don't know. It's out of all three of them, this one and Dawn together, helped by the fact that they had basically the same people working on it back to back with Matt Reeves and same writers and everything, continuing their work.
A lot of the same
cast. Yeah, most of the same cast. Even we get Koba back for some flashbacks. So, you know, you keep mostly the same cast in the movie. And they feel very complete together. This one, maybe there's like hope at the end of Dawn. Obviously, the fact that it ends at dawn, and it seems like maybe things will be for the better, and then, you know, things go a little downhill for the apes at times.
The endings all kind of seem more uplifting in the new trilogy than they do in the old series, but at the end of Dawn, they...
Just because they haven't blown the planet up yet.
Well, we talked about it. Every episode ends like every episode. Every film ends almost terribly except for Battle. Like, Battle's the only one that's like, and it all works out in the end. At the end of Dawn, though, they I don't know if Caesar knows. I don't know if he was told. But Gary Oldman's character says that the military is on their way. Like, they already made the call and they're coming up to destroy them. So you do have that, like, impending doom at the end, even though everything kind of worked out. I don't know if everything worked out. Things worked their way out in an okay way, I guess. They got rid of Koba, and Caesar knows that he has to change his ways. He's got to reapproach this entire situation, and now he's in a legitimate war that he doesn't want to be in. And then this follows through. But this film, too, I always thought, besides the apocalypse now that we see on the wall towards the end of the movie, I always felt that this one felt more like an homage to war films like that and to Full Metal Jacket than something like Kong Skull Island, which I really liked. But Kong Skull Island was like the poster and the shot of Kong out there on the island. And this just felt like more like a war film. If they were looking at things like Saving Private Ryan or something like that, like it feels more like that. And the thing I was going to say, too, when we were brought up The Last of Us, this felt like The Last of Us Part 2 because it has a similar story where it's just this revenge story, you know? Caesar goes off, his family was killed, and he goes off to take his revenge on Woody Harrelson, who is, like, I really think he's a good actor, too, because even when he's always stoned out of his mind, but he plays crazy pretty damn well.
Yeah, he's a great character. Again, they kind of all have really strong casts. This one's not, the human cast in this one isn't very large for like actual characters. There's like, it's like
him. And a little girl, I guess.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson, the guy they call Preacher, that's like the main soldier guy that we start off with at the beginning.
The only soldier that recognizes anything that's going on ever and happens to be through the entire
The only one involved. And then, the little girl are like the only three human characters that have any sort of lines or dialogue. This is really going hard for like, no, the apes are the main characters. Like, we're going to push it to the point that almost like the original Planet of the Apes of there's basically going to be only one human character in the entire film. And he's still not even really the main character. He's still a supporting character.
No, and a lot of the events like that change these characters and that they go through and that are like the B characters, they're all primates too. You got Donkey and Winter and Bad Ape. Like, they're all going through things that are way more dire than Woody Harrelson, who I believe is the only one that you really get any kind of backstory to.
I really love Bad Ape. Like, he's like one of the few times that it's good comic relief that feels very natural for this world. Like, they really did think about that idea of like other apes would also get infected by the virus and, you know, be able to talk just from learning from people around them. So that's just such a great character that I feel like if anybody else, like if you had the wrong actor in it, it would come off as being like super cheesy. Like, I do like Steve Zahn. I like him in most things I watch him, and he's kind of like a really goofy guy. It feels like
Steve Zahn, that's for sure.
It does. Like how we talked about, these characters really feel like the actors, if you like know who these actors are. And that's 100% he fits in perfectly into that scenario.
It does answer a lot of questions subtly, and I think that's another sharp thing with these later, at least Dawn and War. They address the fact that the virus, yes, is able to make any ape more intelligent when it reaches them, which we know that it's reached all around the whole world. So at this point, if there's apes in Japan, they're smart too. You know, we know that. And then there's another aspect that ties back into the original Planet of the Apes with the humans that can't speak. I mean, I guess it's kind of sudden since they kind of made it seem like it was an evolution thing over time. But the people that have survived,
I mean, it is kind of over time. It's been 15 years since the original outbreak.
Sound like it was evolution, like over 2,000 years. People started not using their vocal cords or something.
Man, that's just what the lawgiver said. That's just all propaganda. You can't buy into that.
It's just fake religious stuff. Just fake religious stuff. Text that's made up.
Yeah. What does he know? He's not a scientist. He's just John Huston in some makeup. That's just lawgiver stuff.
He directed some great movies. I trust lawgiver.
You can trust him then. But I do like the way that they set up they are setting up. They could go different, but it does feel like they are really pushing for if there is a fourth film, that it would be, I don't know, like not exactly a straight up remake of the original Planet of the Apes, but you know, we have the ship that flew off on the mission in the first film. Now we're getting the kid that can't talk, who she gets a piece from Bad Ape that's from a Chevy Nova, and that's what Maurice tells her name is, and then Caesar's son's name is Cornelius. So it's very much setting that, you know, 20 years from now, you'll basically be at the timeline that they would be to land, and, you know, it'd be more like the original Planet of the Apes.
I would rather it not be thousands of years, just be 20 years later, and they come back like, wait, how long has time passed?
I mean, it makes more sense almost for it to only be that long, because even like seeing if they kept with like naturally getting smarter and developing more things, for them to go like 3,000 years into the future and apes are still like on like caveman level, like to have no technology whatsoever.
Well, they're not supposed to. Remember, in the book, they apparently were civil, more modern, but the budget, I guess even in Rod Serling's original script, they had to take it back to like, they tried to be cheap with it. That's all.
I know the reasoning why, but it kind of doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that you have a guy like Milo who can figure out how to work a rocket ship in just a few weeks and figure out how to fly the thing off of there, but yet no one else around him is like more evolved than, you know, fire, and, you know, they don't even have electricity or plumbing or anything like that. So I know it's a budgetary reason for why that was like that, but I feel like it makes more sense for it to be a lot closer than it was in the original films.
It's got to be a lot different. So I never really even thought about it that way, but I feel like that is a good way to go. Or if you have another story to tell before you get to that moment, like just another sequel that's, you know, important. But hey, they're going through this kind of remix thing, and I think that they could go the route of Planet of the Apes. I mean, they can really kind of go full circle again, but do their own thing where, you know, they do their kind of Planet of the Apes story, Beneath story, and then it would be really great to have the apes time travel back to like the 70s or something. Like that would be, I would love that they eventually get to like an escape version where they went back to the 70s, but I want to watch it from the apes' point of view of like figuring out the spaceship and time travel.
Now with the way they've updated for how many years it's been since, it would be they'd land in the 90s and everything would be like Gen X stuff like that. It'd be like Captain Marvel, they land back in the 90s. But I do like how they set up the idea of, you know, Caesar at the end of that last film seems to try to trust humans, and he talks to Jason Clarke about, you know, you're a good human, just like James Franco was. And then at the beginning of this one, he still seems to be trying to do that. He releases the humans that he captures, you know, tells them, you know, give them a message. We just want to be left alone, you know, stop attacking us. And what do? They show up, attack them again, kill his whole family. So he's pretty much at the end of his rope.
They don't kill his whole family.
Yeah, they leave Cornelius.
He's still got little Cornelius.
But it's a good way to go into that. And then the way they have the relationship with the little girl works pretty well. That Maurice like takes her under her wing. And even in the beginning, even though she's just like a child, Caesar still seems very untrusting of humans. Like he's had enough of humans at this point. He doesn't want anything to do with them anymore.
Well, shit, that her parents or whoever the hell was with her pulled a gun on them, and Caesar's the one that like took him out.
Yeah, whereas like he would seemingly would have been the first one to say like, oh, we can work this out or something like that.
I mean, he waited till he drew the gun, but Caesar was ready. Yeah, it's it does have like a Band of Brothers type feel to it. They weren't really used much in it in the Dawn. I guess Blue Eyes was used more, but they kill Blue Eyes, he's mistaken for Caesar, and they kill his wife. Which, did his wife ever have a name?
Oh, she's Cornelia.
Oh, she is, yeah, Cornelia. She's Cornelia.
That's where they get Cornelius from.
Oh, I remember Cornelia from the first movie, from Rise. I did not realize that's
I'm pretty who sure the wife they say was that's, in the second. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they say that's what her name is.
That well, it's there the you same go. Makes ape. So much more sense. And I felt like Lake, Blue Eyes' girlfriend, was really reminiscent of Lisa. Like, as close as they were going to get to Lisa. They're like, we can't just have an ape named Lisa. Yeah. We gotta name it something.
Yeah, they all have like these more like tribal names, and then just Lisa.
Yeah, just Lisa. That's Lisa. I mean, they do have the Alpha Omega, which kind of plays into it in a similar fashion. I mean, it's not a nuclear bomb, but it kind of leads up to the destruction of mankind. Just, it's on a lower scale, but it seems to kill them off for the most part, like the most threatening chunk of mankind, until Charlton Heston shows up years later. But yeah, I just think that this film ends up working out really, really well. It's a good introduction to Woody Harrelson's character. I do like the apes that are Koba's old people. The apes that sided with Koba are now working with the people, and they're donkeys, which is weird because I are they thinking of Donkey Kong or something? They're like domesticated or something, but yeah. It's like offensive. It's more complex. It's not like hard to understand complex, but all the characters are really deep. Even the ones that you only have for a little bit of time, such as Winter, the albino gorilla, he's scared. And they try to talk to him, we'll get through this. You just got to trust. We're all afraid, actually. It's not just you. But then he ends up being the traitor in the situation and kind of ratting out where Caesar was staying. I don't know. Maybe Caesar shouldn't have stayed in, like, the penthouse suite of Ape City. And he would have been fine. He did have a very beautiful waterfall view from his room.
Yeah, and it's a good way they set up. They're all supposed to leave and go to this new land that Rocket found for them. And again, kind of like how you brought up the Last of Us 2 comparison about it being a revenge story and kind of that idea of revenge isn't the best way to go about things, or, you know, revenge just leads to more problems, in that maybe if he goes off on his own, but maybe if he was with them, they wouldn't have got captured. Yeah. Maybe they wouldn't have got captured if Caesar had been with them the whole time. They would have been more safe and secure, but instead he goes off on his own, and, you know, because he just has to kill the colonel.
It's a good character arc for him, because at the end of Dawn, he knows that he takes the blame for it, but things weren't as simple as he wanted them to be. And then at the end, in this movie, he's faced with the idea that, you know, maybe he's not all that good of a leader, and that there's just too much hate and anger in him, and he's no different than how people are. Like that Koba, I don't really think that they needed the flashbacks of Koba, but I do kind of like them when he's delirious and he's basically being tortured, so he sees him in that way. It doesn't really bother me seeing him like that. But yeah, he's kind of his identity's up on the table for who he is as an ape and all the choices that he's made so far. And he does do the righteous thing of, if you want to call it righteous, he goes out on this revenge quest by himself. And as these things normally go, there's a team that goes with him. Maurice and Rocket, and I don't know who that gorilla... Does that gorilla have a name?
Yeah, Luca.
Luca.
I can't believe you don't know his name. That was like the saddest part of the entire movie. And you don't even remember his name.
He was just like a good ape that, kind of took one for the team. And then Caesar had to like revisit kind of his thing with Buck. I do like too when Caesar finally gets to this base and they have all the apes like hung up and it's reminiscent of the original film where the apes were using those scarecrows to keep people away. It worked pretty well in this too.
Yeah, so that's another good callback to the original film. And kind of the whole prison sequence for the end of the film, the second half of the film. I know you brought up some other war movies that are definitely clearly referenced. Like Apocalypse Now is one of the biggest ones. He's the colonel, which is, you know, Colonel Kurtz, and he shaves his head. He does a lot of very much like Kurtz, like things like Marlon Brando does in that film.
He's in the shadows, yeah, and shit, yeah, like that.
He very much is an homage, I think, to that character for sure. But I think the biggest like homage to that entire final sequence in the prison goes all the way back to Pierre Boulle, the original novelist for Planet of the Apes, his other big film, which is Bridge on the River Kwai, which is a whole big, you know, more or less an escape film, but a lot of it centers on, you know, teamwork and sticking together with everyone and, you know, overcoming, you know, being beat down by your capturers that in that film, they're building a bridge. In this film, they're building a wall and, you know, they have to stick together and, you know, use their resources to get out. So that I thought was kind of a perfect homage to connect that back to the original author from a completely different work of his and use that in an Apes film.
Yeah, you're right. I wasn't even thinking about that. I was thinking like prison escape films.
Yeah, Great Escape would be one like that. I was watching some of the interviews with like Matt Reeves and the writer, and they said that was their big influences when they started working on the film. They they asked Fox to like set up a screening room where they could just sit and watch war movies. And they said those were kind of like their two biggest ones that they watched was Apocalypse Now and Bridge on the River Kwai. And yeah, like The Great Escape and stuff like that. Cause they said they wanted to like immerse themselves in those classic war films to try to get like, what are the most important things. And I think they're very smart in that he said like the best war movies are the type that have war is just the setting. It's not the main plot. It's just something that's happening in the background. It's the characters, you know, and I think he's 100% right. There's a lot of war movies that the focus is the battle.
Oh, he's
and
proven his like, point with this film. If that was,
yeah, the war is just the background to the drama.
Yeah. I mean, it does have, there's more nice callbacks too. Like the beach definitely is a callback to like the end of Planet of the Apes, but it does have a lot of that war. Like it reminds me of Full Metal Jacket a lot too, where the perspective is like over the shoulder or behind the head and following them through the war zone. There's a moment where I think Caesar is walking. It might be underneath the tunnels or something, but it's like directly. No. It's when he sneaks into the base camp to confront Winter, and it's just behind his head, and it totally has that war vibe to it. And we talked about this too. It is like another leap forward in special effects. Like Caesar looks so fucking real. They have snow in his hair. He like when he's like wet or crying, like you can it runs down his face in a super realistic way.
He's aged too, so he has like more gray hair that kind of blends in, and he has like it seems like he has thinner hair. He's not like the young ape that he was. So yeah, I think everything
he moves differently too, which is probably back to Andy Serkis, but he moves like he's a slightly older ape now too. I mean, he took quite a beating at the end of Dawn. He had been shot and then he had been hit with a pipe a bunch. You know what I mean? Like this, he went through a lot of shit and he goes through a lot of shit again, but it totally has that vibe of he's motivated enough to get through what he needs to do. He doesn't really care about himself anymore. And I do feel like he still cares about his people because he believes that they don't need him and that they can go on without him and they'll be fine and he can go do this. Take his revenge. But then when he finally gets to that moment where he gets to the base camp and he realizes that there are more apes that have been captured there, his own people, and well, he learns through like Bad Ape that there could be more, but his focus at that moment goes back onto the apes. I mean, he definitely has that revenge vibe. And maybe like I don't know, it's just I feel like any movie that can give us a good emotional story will always pay off whether you have seen everything in that movie before. So how this has that war vibe and or a revenge story, and what most revenge stories end with them almost, you know, not taking their revenge because they've learned some lesson throughout. And I don't know if Caesar's technically learned a lesson, but when he gets to his moment, it's just that, what's his name, Colonel McCullough, is that his name?
I don't remember his last name. I just remember he's the colonel.
The colonel. I think it said McCullough on his shirt, unless he's just wearing somebody else's shirt. He's just so pathetic in that moment that Caesar can't. He can't even bring himself to do it.
Yeah, the way that they talk about like how the virus affects them, the way that they set it up in the film where he talks about, you know, that his son was on a mission and his son was the first one to stop talking, and they said, oh, he was like an animal. He couldn't talk or do anything. And then, you know, the doctor stopped talking. And he keeps saying that it turned them into mindless animals. But it definitely seems like that's not true. And that it's just kind of them. He's even told, you know, he explains to Caesar that the humans that are coming think that they can deal with this with medicine. And he says, oh, that'll just lead to more viruses and more dangerous things like what already wiped us out to begin with. He's like a weird anti-vaxxer type guy that's like, it's like, no, medicine will just make it worse. You just kill everyone that has it. But Nova is kind of the best example of that. It doesn't seem to affect your intelligence, because she picks up on like the sign language from the other apes around her, especially Maurice, pretty quickly and learns very fast. She just can't talk, which I think kind of
right, like when he says he's thirsty and then she says that she's also thirsty.
Yeah, so it's
and you have that nice moment where Caesar hands over the water because he's a softie. Yeah.
But it's a good way that they play that of, you know, and he says he killed his son, And he said, like, when he looked in his eyes, you know, he still saw that he was, like, his son was in there, but he still killed him anyway and still insisted that, oh, no, he was a mindless animal that couldn't do anything anymore just because he couldn't talk. But she very much proves that it doesn't seem to affect your, like, it doesn't affect your intelligence. It just makes you not be able to talk for some reason. And I would say even at the end when he's, like, how you were saying, he's, like, you know, in that sad state of he wants Caesar to kill him. That almost seems to imply that he still has intelligence that, you know, he wants to be killed and he has the ability to do it himself. He's not, he hasn't lost his intelligence. He still knows what's going on. He just can't talk and he can't handle that. And I do believe Woody Harrelson when he kind of says, you know, he says about how Caesar's like way too emotional and he does very much seem to say like, oh, did I
mean, that's the way we described him all these movies so far.
Oh, yeah. But he definitely is that character of, you know, he killed Caesar's family and he flat out tells him, well, I mean, I was there to kill you. Sorry if I killed your family. They weren't who I was trying to kill. I just didn't know who I was supposed to be killing there.
He doesn't get sympathy, but he gets his story makes 100% sense for him as a character. He doesn't come off as totally crazy. He just comes off as somebody that's went through some shit and this is how he's dealing with it. I feel that it comes off as depth. I mean, that's depth is basically the illusion that there's more going on with this character than what you see. And I think he pulls it off well. It's well written into this. And yeah, I don't know. I don't think Caesar ever kind of connects with him on that level besides feeling awful. Because I guess in the same way, when you have these revenge stories and we talked about the cycle of violence, what does Caesar get at the end of the day if he ends up killing Woody Harrelson? He's just basically become Woody Harrelson. And with things like The Last of Us, all you're doing is you're going to start something like what? Somebody else might come after you for all of the shit that you've done. So Caesar's head is still very much in the right place. He still very much cares about people. His guard is more up than it was in the previous films, but it kind of harkens back to the religious vibes of, like, you know, the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, where he's basically gonna take this beating as opposed to, like, give the colonel, like, the satisfaction that he wants. And he frees his people
just like Moses.
I mean, it kind of is
bringing it back to Charlton Heston.
It really does. I mean, he doesn't. There is somewhat of a flood, I guess, mostly with that avalanche that we get at the end of the movie. But
yeah, the final battle, I think, plays out really well. And I enjoy the way they give, I think he's labeled as Red Donkey, possibly, in the credits. I don't think he ever has another name in that entire film.
Oh, I just called him Donkey because he's like the main one.
I think they reference some other apes as being Donkey, but I saw one that was labeled Red Donkey, so I believe that's the main one. And he does have that great moment. They have a lot of interactions pretty much from the beginning of the film. They keep crossing paths over and over again, him and Caesar, where it starts out and he says that Koba's apes fear him. And he kind of says, no, I think it's you're the one that fears us that will eventually get you or something. And they keep coming back together. And he keeps referencing the fact of, oh, you let them call you Donkey. You know, you're not a real ape anymore. You're just a slave. You know, do you think they'll let you live after they kill all of us? They'll definitely kill you next. They're only keeping you around for now because you have use. But I do love the moment when they free everybody and he gets shot. And it almost feels like the whole movie is kind of pointing you towards, you think that preacher character is going to be the one that's going to have a change of heart. He kind of like looks distressed when Caesar brings up, you know, that you kill your own people when they get sick. And Donkey always seems like he doesn't care. He's just there to serve. And I feel like the movie really tries to make you think the preacher character is going to be the one that, you know, turns against the colonel and says, you know, becomes like Jason Clark and says, you know, I don't think this is right. I don't think we should be doing things like this. Maybe we should just let him go. And he's still the one that shoots Caesar in the back with the crossbow. And we get that great moment of Donkey getting the rocket launcher and just blowing him to pieces.
That is a wonderful moment.
Yeah, that's a wonderful moment. It's so great the way that plays out. And like I said, kind of goes against your expectations. You're kind of expecting that Donkey's gonna kill Caesar because he hates him so much, and that maybe the preacher character will save Caesar and show that humans can be good, and it goes against your expectations a little bit there by having him donkey save Caesar and give his life for him, even though he's been, you know, hating him the entire film.
It's really nice, though, to give him that redemptive arc, because going off the last movie, Koba had so many chances to do it, and he doesn't go that way. So to have another Koba just doesn't make as much sense.
Yeah.
Or if you want to take the preacher character and give him that redemptive arc, I feel like there's been enough people that have kind of like changed their stance on the apes as they knew them more. But yeah, he does seem like he's the one that, yeah, I don't know if it's so much of a fake out, but there's almost no moment in this movie where I think that Donkey is going to have a change of heart until literally a couple minutes beforehand where he's being screamed at for the grenade launcher, and you could just tell that they're under attack, and it just feels futile, and he knows that that's not where he should be. So it is a wonderful moment where he turns, and it's always fun to watch somebody explode, like, in a movie, especially one that's, like, all of a sudden like that. Like, do you really think that Caesar's gonna be offed by some guy that gets a second shot at it, killing him? You know what I mean? Like... But then I was saying that the Alpha Omega stuff that they have on all their helmets, and it's kind of the colonel's motto. So it's on that big tank of I guess, gas or something explosive, at least. And I really did like how that became not necessarily like a nuclear bomb, but a big enough blast that it was able to take out almost all those people. And this also has a really nice, subtle way of, I think they just say it in one line, that the military that's coming for him doesn't agree with him. So it harkens back on that Apocalypse Now type plot line. But when they're like, who are they sending? And he's like, all of them. They're going to send everybody they have left to come take me. So you know that this is literally the last of the military.
Yeah.
So it does. It fits a hell of a lot better. Like Battle, where they kind of take that idea of, yeah, it is just this small battle, and it's like a personal journey with that Caesar. But in this one, this is the end of the war. Like this is the winner of the entire planet. And I do love that moment where, is it when the avalanche starts? Caesar's like getting dazed because he got shot, survived that explosion. But I love the military when they notice him standing there and they all just start to look back at him. It's a great moment, even though you can't see any of these characters' faces since they're all wearing like the goggles and everything like that. But it's just this great moment of like the legend Caesar before they get totally crushed by an avalanche, which is great. I didn't really expect an avalanche to come through and kill everybody when I started that movie. And it tricked me a little bit too, because I thought Caesar was all right. I was like, the wound looks pretty deep. It went right into his fucking side, probably like punctured a lung. But he was still swinging around on trees, and it seemed like he made it out of the tundra. Or off the mountain, I guess. They probably didn't really go that far. They have this nice moment that kind of looks like the place. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the place where they filmed the original Planet of the Apes in Nevada. Like, it looks like that same type of area where they crash landed in the lake.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely another setup of looking like, you know, towards a more remake of the original Planet of the Apes, that they're getting to that kind of location. Like, is that going to be the Forbidden Zone now as they get further and further in, and then they start building up things that look more like the original film? So, but I would say if it never, I'd love to see more Apes movies just because I do love them all. And I think they're all very interesting. But that ending might be perfect if they never made another Apes film, at least in this trilogy, if they reboot it at some point down the line. But it's a perfect ending if it never
honestly never all the trilogy, any movie, if they never made another one, would be fine. Like, if they ended Rise without making another one, I'd be like, well, that was still a good ending. You know what's going to happen. And then Dawn's the kind of the same thing. Like, you know what's going to happen. But yeah, it is a really good moment, too, of Caesar having that satisfaction that his people are okay. I think he's proud of himself, too, that he was able to, like, overcome his demons and at the end be, like, the best that he could possibly be. And, yeah, he's going to have that legendary status. So I think if they do another movie, Caesar's going to be, like, 100% biblical. Like, he's going to be something that everybody just talks about.
Yeah.
And they probably will have statues and shit.
Yeah, Maurice definitely, I think, is going to be, like, if we're continuing on that same logic, Maurice is definitely the lawgiver character. He's the one that seems to, you know, he's the one that reads and is the most knowledgeable. So he would probably be the one that actually can write down what the laws are and stuff like that. And he'd be the one that references the original ape that started it all. They're definitely setting that up, which, again, would work great. But if they don't, I'm fine with them not.
Hey, I'm exactly the same way. I just think I'm just kind of blown away by these movies that, surface level, they seem kind of simplistic, you know? But they do have such, like, a deep emotional cut every time that you watch them. Even Rise. And like, Rise, I do think that is a really good movie. It just sort of doesn't feel on par with the rest of them because the other ones are way too good. And it feels nice to finally watch some movies on our podcast that I'm like, they're way too good. We didn't even deserve movies that were that good. And it's crazy, too, because I think after rewatching all these movies, like, I appreciate the original run. I love all the movies. I liked the remake more than I thought I would when I revisited it. I think that the new trilogy is where it's at, and that's the best of the Planet of the Apes so far. They are able to, I think it just comes down to emotion. We had it somewhat in Battle, but, you know, with the lack of budget being an all-time low, really fucking suffered from it. But yeah, you never know. They either reboot it or they try something different. At the very least, I want to see Andy Serkis play like Cornelius. Like, it just look like he looks just like Caesar, but now he's Cornelius. And they pull that.
Do the Roddy McDowell. He just plays his own son.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want. Yeah, I do. I never even thought about it that way, where you talked about just kind of like making the Planet of the Apes plot happen now. Even without time travel, I mean, that'd be kind of cool if it didn't even have time travel. Just for some reason, he's in space for 20 years. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't even have to be time travel. It could just be that they were on, like, some sort of mission and they've been away from the planet for so long they weren't really in contact and they come back to the planet and think that maybe they landed in a wrong place or something like that. Yeah. Think they landed on the wrong planet.
Yeah, I mean, they can visit so many different places in New York. That would be kind of cool. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Either that or what do you do if you're going to retell the Planet of the Apes story that's been done twice now? I think you do it from the apes' perspective. You know, they think all people were gone and then have them deal with a human that's smart. And they're like, where did you come from? Like, it's from their perspective trying to figure it out and understand it.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting idea to see.
But before the pandemic, they said in 2019 they had a writer, they had writers, I guess they had some sort of draft, and they hired a director. So it was totally game. I don't know if the pandemic ruined it in any way. But I remember when they confirmed who it was. I don't remember who it is. I think it's like another kind of new director.
Wes Ball, anything, was attached.
Oh, that's the...
He's done like the Maze Runner films.
Yeah, I was going to say The Scorch Trials, which I think is the second one.
Actually, he directed all of them. Mm-hmm. He directed all of those. So, yeah, he was the one that's attached. Doesn't give any information on what, if it's still continued. I guess it's just up in the air. Yeah, it does. It is right before the pandemic. It's like in February 2020, Wes Ball was announced as the director. It literally was like right at the very beginning of the pandemic that it happened. They announced everybody.
Is Matt Reeves like producer on it or not anything?
Involved? I think it does say that he was listed as being a producer. And
are the writers the same?
No, different writers, but that Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver, the ones that were the original writers, they did the first two films. They did Rise and Dawn, are still producers on it. So, I mean, largely, it seems like it was going to be a lot of the same people. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it'll just really depend on going forward. I mean, obviously, the pandemic kind of changed. Well, maybe we don't know yet so far how much the pandemic has changed the film industry in general in terms of, like, are the box office numbers ever going to get back to where they once were? Or a lot of people, they've gotten used to an entire year of not going to the movie theater. And I do think there's going to be a good portion of people that are like, I don't need to do that anymore. Like, they learned that.
I mean, I'm kind of close to that. As much as I love going to the movies, we talked about it before. They're just not respectful. Like, you go there and there's people talking and it's just obnoxious. I saw something today that it was like the funniest letterbox review of A Quiet Place 2. And the review was, it gave it like the full 5 stars. And it said, some guy walked into my movie theater, took a picture of Cillian Murphy with the flash on and then left. And that was the review of A Quiet Place 2. I don't know. If everybody's in to the movie and everybody's laughing and enjoying it, that's a great experience. But when you have people that just like one person's like in their phone and you keep seeing that light and it's distracting.
Every movie theater experience is like Robert De Niro in Cape Fear. That guy in front of you, like constantly, like at awkward moments in the film, laughing uncontrollably.
I'd be okay with somebody like, I don't know. It would probably still annoy me if he was in the theater. But, but I mean, like, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Like, I remember when I saw Final Destination 3 and they cut from the tanning beds to the coffins and somebody laughed so loud and they were like, oh my God. And it was just, it made it better. Like, it enhanced the theater, like, the experience.
That's great.
When I saw Django Unchained, and he was killing everybody, this lady in the theater was like, kill him, Django, kill him. And I was like, I don't know. It made everything better. It could have been obnoxious, but in the moment it actually kind of added to the experience.
Yeah. It's one of those that it's gotten more and more of, you almost have to go see the film the first night it comes out, or you had to maybe like hope you see it in like a morning on a weekday or some like off day when most of the theater is going to be empty anyway, where it really feels like if you go in like a Saturday afternoon, that's when you're just getting the people that the movie's just something they can go to just kind of waste their time. It's like, if you go on the first night, like 99% of the theater is going to be people that are like genuinely super excited to watch that movie. And they're going to like focus on the film or, you know, an off time. But that's where I feel like I've had the worst experiences a lot of times, is going to see a movie just on like a Sunday afternoon or something like that. And yeah, you just get the people that like, I don't know, you'll get people that like just left church and it's like, what are we going to do? Oh, I don't know. I guess we'd go to the movies today. And it's just a thing to do.
Caesar, when me and Chris went to go see Hail Caesar, it just started and this guy walked in the theater and stopped in front of us, just stood there. And he's like watching the movie. And I'm like, excuse me. And he can't hear me. So I like tap him on the shoulder. I'm like, do you mind not blocking us? And he's like, oh, I was going to move. I'm thinking, dude, you didn't even know we were there. And you walked in right then. But yeah, I've had so many bad experiences. I remember when I saw inherent vice, and there was just a kid like yelling and screaming, and you're just like, I remember the whole theater basically left after that movie and went straight to the customer service to get refund tickets.
Who brings their kid to a Paul Thomas Anderson film?
Oh no, there was a baby crying in Straight out of Compton, and I'm like, what? And they kept taking the baby like back, but not out the doors, and it's like it's not doing anything because we can all still hear this kid. The kid that had to go see Straight Out. What was your first movie? You know, at 6 months, my mom took me to go see Straight Out of Compton. If it's, you know, but then it's weird because I've seen kids' movies. Like, I remember when I went to go see Monsters University, we had went into the theater and it was like kids yelling and screaming. And me and Steph thought, oh, fuck, this is going to be terrible. The movie started and they all shut up and just watched the movie. And I'm like, oh, wow, really. Really kind of wasn't expecting that from these kids. I just thought it was going to be a madhouse. Yeah.
Oh, it's a madhouse.
But yeah, I mean, what's the... I have upgraded to surround system. I have two TVs that can do 4K. I mean, they're pretty big. And I can get my, you know, I can listen to it loud. I can get quite an experience at home. And if I wanted to invite some people over, you and a couple other people, like, we could still have that same kind of theatrical experience.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dolby Cinema is pretty fucking nice. I don't have essentially have that in my house. But I do have that theory. I'm like, hey, if the movie's fucking loud, I won't be able to hear anybody else.
Yeah.
So it's kind of awkward. Because we've already kind of gone through the, I wanted to see Spiral. Didn't see it like the 2 weeks it came out, after it came out. And then it's already on video on demand and it's coming out like in 4 more weeks from now, it'll be on video. So it's like, I can go see it, but.
Might as well just wait now.
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, it's going to be like the same thing with A Quiet Place 2. At this point, I missed it the first week. I'm probably just going to wait till it comes on, what it's supposed to be on Paramount Plus, I think, or I think that's who owns the mm-hmm. rights to it. It's like, I guess I'll just watch it then when it comes out.
It's going to take a while, too, because I like the movie plan that like AMC had that they were forced into after movie, yeah. Like they had to compete with Movie Pass. And when I had something like that, like, oh, I was going to the movies at least every weekend. But I don't feel like there's enough movies out, or there's a good chunk of movies that still end up being like an HBO Max movie where you could watch it there if you wanted to.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost not going to be till 2022 till you start getting that steady. And that's if...
Not until Dune comes out. Not
until Dune. And even in 2022, that's all like dependent on that between now and then, like, I don't know, a second wave doesn't break out and like shut a lot of things down, or that, you know, some variant happens that the vaccine doesn't work against. I mean, so far they're saying all the numbers are good, and we're like hitting like all time lows for the number of new cases that keep happening, and you know, vaccinations are going up. But it's, unless something crazy happens, it's probably not going to be until 2022 that you get that back to that steady stream of there's
movies every week. I mean, it's still kind of shitty because. My situation where like I've kind of built up my home theater experience the best that I can. Obviously, it's limited. Technology is always going to be limited. But there's fucking people that their only alternative to watch, you know, the new Mortal Kombat movie is on their laptop.
Yeah.
That is like 1080p at best and 15 years old and barely, you know, and that's how that one speaker works. Like, that's what they're watching this movie on.
I mean, you know, somebody watched it on their phone. Yeah, I was like, you know, somebody watched it on their phone.
I mean, it's not the probably the worst thing, but yeah, it's not the experience that was intended for you.
No.
I was watching a movie the other day. Maybe it was Dawn. And I had to go in and change the fucking settings to the cinema mode because it's a new TV. My old TV broke. And it's just sort of weird because I'll just say a friend. I won't call out his name. But he said he got a new 4K TV, and he's like, it's terrible. Everything looks like a camcorder. I was like, no, you got that motion smoothing on.
Yeah, you got to turn that
off. It is literally... I don't understand, and some people can't see it. I won't drop another name, but there's another person that has motion smoothing on their TV every time I go over, and I'm like, will you turn that off? And they're like, oh, I don't see it. I'm like, you need to turn it off. I can see it. I can tell. It looks terrible. If you want to watch live-action sports, I don't think it looks bad.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's made for mostly, but most people just leave it on for everything else. Because it's, yeah, it doesn't look more realistic. It's a hassle to turn it just looks off goofy. And on every time, like when you switch back and forth between live sports and regular TV.
It's getting a little bit better now, because the new TV, when I hit settings, the very first setting it gives you is the ability to change the image. So you have like vivid standard cinema. So they do have a cinema mode now. I guess Scorsese got it. Remember when he was talking about adding cinema mode? But before that, like my TV that's 5 years old, you have to go in and anything that has a dumb name like flow or smooth, turn it all off and then it looks fine. But good luck hunting that. And it never makes any sense because it's just like everything's a term made up specifically for that brand of television. So you're, except maybe like if it's a cheaper brand, they don't really care. They might just straight up be like motion smoothing. But yeah, this is a one. This is the only Apes movie that I have that's 4K. Ooh. And holy shit, does it look good. And watching something like Rise on Blu-ray, where Caesar, like, he, in 6 years' time, he's, technology's really come a far, far along. Oh, blows my mind. Even that, well, we had that ad when they first started teasing this, that very first ad they had was like, they loved going on Caesar's face.
Yeah.
And this was Caesar in the snow. They're like, you want to know what war is? War for the Planet of the Apes? It's Sneezer. Caesar in the snow. Fucking snow. Yeah. I said Sneezer. Caesar in the snow. But yeah, I mean, there's... Ah, my God. And it does this thing that the other movie... There's more talking in it. But for the most part, I think you still got to pay quite a bit of attention to it. I feel like Dawn did a really good job of being like, sorry, if you want to watch our movie, you got to watch all of it or you're not going to understand what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And this is pretty similar. I'd imagine spoken language is probably 20% of the movie, if that. But so good, so good. I put this one right beneath Dawn, or at least side by side with Dawn.
Yeah,
it's good. Maybe Dawn has the better story, but this is just as emotional.
Yeah, I think they're both good. I think they're pretty equal.
Who is your favorite character in this one? Is it Red Donkey?
I don't know. I do really like Bad Ape. Bad Ape's funny. I enjoy, like I said, that could very easily have been like very stupid or just not worked and like really brought everything down. But I don't know. Something about the way Steve Zahn plays him in the film. Like, I love when they go out to go on their adventure and they're all just getting ready to get on horseback and he comes out and he has a vest and a hat on, he dresses up like more like a human. So I like moments like that. It feels like he's almost the character that leads towards, if you get the future where everyone wears like, not necessarily like the original Planet of the Apes, but they have like clothing, like
the Burton version.
Yeah. Like he's the version of like, yeah, man, clothes. They're cool.
He does have a wonderful introduction too, where he comes to steal their stuff and he takes their horse and the way that they shoot it, like when you know it's an ape, it looks like an ape, but from their perspective, it could totally be a person that's stealing all their shit.
Yeah.
So it's a really nice moment where he runs up to that lodge and they track him down to him hiding in that fireplace. And then the first real introduction you get to him is that comic relief where he just starts throwing the shit back that he stole. Like it just comes chucking out at them. Yeah, I don't know. Everybody's so complex. I mean, maybe it goes back to Caesar for me. He basically has had a three film arc though. So he's the one that everybody's getting the closest to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this was our Apes journey. And after rewatching all of them, do you still feel the same that they all kind of have something good in them?
Yeah. There's something to recommend in every single one of these movies.
Yeah, I mean, even like, what would you say the worst one is?
It's probably still Battle.
Battle's the worst for you?
Probably. Just again, and it's like not their fault. It really is. I mean, it really is like they were up against a budget that was like less than $1 million. Like the fact that they even made a full length Apes movie for, I mean, what's basically a sixth of the budget of the original film. The fact that they even managed to make a film in general that really isn't awful. Like, it's just not as good as the rest of them.
For me, it's Beneath, because it feels like they don't really know how to tell the story that they need to tell quite yet.
Yeah.
And I've never been a big fan of, like, villains that are emotionless. And that's kind of like what these mutants are. I like the concept of the mutants more than I like the mutants. But that happens a few times, because when you talk about Battle, I like the concept of Battle a lot more than I like the execution of it. But there are a lot of good, great character moments in Battle. So I feel like that kind of wins me over at the end. That twist ending with Lawgiver. Maybe I'll remember him the next time I put Planet of the Apes in. I'll be like, who the fuck's... I'm always like, who's Lawgiver? Like, I always forget.
Yeah.
I always forget who he is. Then you get in the Battle. You're like, oh yeah, he's this character that's narrating the fifth Apes movie for like, I don't know, 5 minutes tops.
Yeah.
If that. But yeah, I honestly, I loved all these movies. I'm glad that we were able to tackle franchise. Because sometimes if we, on this podcast, pick something like, oh, we're just going to do science fiction, and somebody picks Planet of the Apes, we'll probably not visit the rest of them.
No.
We might have done the remake. We might eventually do the Apes trilogy, but I doubt we would have done Beneath through Battle.
Probably not.
But here we are at the end. We made it through the end.
Yeah.
And that means you aren't going to hear our Apes intro anymore. That's kind of sad.
You're going to have to work on a new intro for our next films.
I don't know if I can keep making a new intro for everything. It's not that I'm lazy, but I would, for the next actual theme that we have, which you can get into or you can get into after, because we have like an episode, like a special episode in between. Yeah. What would that be? That'd be a weird intro. Sure, just me imagining what it would be would just be, it's just weird in my head. Just dialogue. It's just
random quotes.
Yeah, because for this one, I felt that, you know, I stuck with Charlton Heston for two lines, and then I had to mix in New Apes, and I probably wouldn't have really included Mark Wahlberg's line. I don't even know if it's that memorable, but he needed to have a line, because it is like the second attempt at Apes. This is really the third attempt at Apes. But I'm with you. I'd like to see them carry it on. And if they drop the ball, they drop the ball. Hey, that's most series. Most of the franchises I like the first movie. The rest are never like as good, but you always have that hope that they'll be able to return to the roots. But we'll see. Thank you everybody for listening. We're Cinema D'Amore on Twitter. We're at Cinema D'Amore, Facebook/CinemaD'Amore. On Twitter, I am at JJMorgan19. That's where you can follow me. I'm currently being like, oh yeah, this is what I'm watching. So it's really exciting. And Chuck?
ChuckFinn66. You're on Twitter?
Yep. I know this is not a visual medium, but I can see Chuck. And we're recording late on a Friday night. And he is blending into the darkness. He is fading away.
I can give you like the Halloween moment at the end when Michael just slowly emerges out of the shadow and just kind of slowly pulls in.
And if you go back, you're Malcolm from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you for listening to all of our Apes episodes. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
If there's any other franchises that you'd like us to tackle, just let us know. Will we tackle it? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
We're pretty busy. We don't always have the opportunity to tackle heavy franchises.
Takes a lot.
You want to tell them what we're doing next week? Our special episode?
Well,
I'm just calling it a special episode.
It's special.
Yeah. You want to just not tell them?
Yeah, let's leave it as a surprise. Let's make it extra special.
Okay. All right, that sounds good. All right, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks.
We're Cinema D'Amore. Thank you for listening to our Planet of the Apes episodes. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It'd be greatly appreciated if you would subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.